Bones are amazing things. They hold us up. They support us. They make us strong. But bones have other uses. In the past, bones were thrown by diviners, seeking out the mysteries of the future. Now the bones are cubes, made of plastic or resin. But they still reveal things to us as they fall from our fingers and rattle across the table. The story becomes clear. Welcome to Bone Throwers Theater, an RPG actual play podcast.
Hello, this is Jordan. Thank you so much for tuning into Bone Throwers Theater this time around. We are in a commentary episode for a very special one-shot that we've had for Microscope.
My name is Aaron,
and this is Jeremy.
This is Johnny.
This is Ellie.
This is Jeff.
All right, so we have gone around the table a couple of times at this point, and everybody has had a chance to contribute. And I really think that this world is very rich. Yes. It has a lot of depth.
Yes.
It is, I think, probably one of the most varied groups that we have to choose from as player characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everything is on the table at this point, except maybe the Atua themselves.
Yeah, we kind of said...
They're a little god tier.
At one point.
Unless we were all Atua, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, not official.
We can't. Be this wasn't in our no list. Internals.
Yeah.
Which, as characters, was...
Lackluster at best.
Yeah, lackluster at best. I mean, the story was cool, but the character development just wasn't there because they're immortal beings.
Right.
And also the third act got a little messy.
Yeah. But that's...
That's a different discussion.
Yeah.
But, yeah, one thing that we had said, we did say that there was, like, immortal beings and demigods. I think that, yes, was more for Microscope than for playing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
For building the world that our characters will reside in.
Yeah. Yes, I was about to say it wasn't a hard and fast yes or no that we can't play that. It was just more of a, they're out there, but.
Depending on what we play, we may encounter them very much so.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe a major part of our game.
Or kill them, yes.
So, what would you guys like to name the next campaign?
Oh, you're asking us this now.
We have no idea.
We gotta choose an era first.
We have a list that we've created so far. I mean, honestly, the name, there's one name that stands out to me, but the name that we end up going with might not even be on this list.
Sure.
We have Parallel Worlds, we have Sky Rings, Falling Rings, Rings of Power, and Age of Atua.
I like Age of Atua, but I think that we can shift that based on era.
Yes.
Or it could be Age of Atua, comma,
colon. Such and such.
Colon. Age of Atua.
Yeah, thanks.
Colon.
Do we have to have a set name? Can we break it up into sections? Like, there is a... Well, okay, there's a set name, but then there's a sub.
Yeah, subtitle. Like, so I'm thinking
well,
subtitle by season.
Yeah,
so, yeah, or a season, yeah.
So season one, Age of Atua... Colon. And the farmers.
Yeah.
Subtitles
yeah.
being our seasons
right.
based on what we're encountering. The problem is we don't always know what we're going to encounter at the beginning of the season.
No. Right.
Or at the end of the season.
Unless I do a lot more guidance than I normally do. Which I have been intending to do some more prep work in general. I've been very interested in the idea of using countdown clocks for major events.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big trend right now in RPGs, and
yep.
I played a visual novel game that made heavy use of clocks and balancing different resources. Not that
timing
kind of...
is everything.
So, what would you be interested in playing in this world?
You mean what character?
What type of campaign? Do you want an exploration game? Let's go ahead and take politics off the table, because I think we've done a lot of political games.
I personally like the idea of an exploration game.
Yeah, I like almost episodic exploration, like planet by planet.
Star Trek type.
Yeah.
Where each session is a different encounter.
With, yeah. You know, overarching things.
Yeah.
I think that overarching theme definitely is something that we should still have, even if we do more episodic stuff, because I think those overarching themes drive character development.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
And that could be that subtitle. You know, if Jordan has that plan... This season, we're going to focus on the farmers, and then but we're going from planet to planet encountering different farmers.
One thing that came up that we had not written down because it was between episode recordings and I don't think we had a chance to, was calling it Bonds of Atua.
Uh-huh.
And I almost like that a little bit better than Age of Atua. Because Age of Atua has a little bit more of a, this is the time period that we're playing in. And Bonds of Atua has a more relationship-driven theme to it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's my two cents. But, for example, we could do campaign name and then : Shadow of the Pilikia. That could be a big theme for that season of the campaign.
Yeah.
Or name of the campaign, Beyond the Parallels.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Name of the campaign, Wayfinder's Regret.
Or Wayfinder's Charge.
Name of the campaign, The In-Betweens.
We just need a name of the campaign. We need to choose which era we're going to be in. Then narrow it down to...
So, is that what we're doing? Do we want to choose now? Or I would say we spend some time
commenting.
Okay.
Well, one of my comments from today's sessions... You know, we did a lot of focus on the collapsing of the portals today and the parallels. And we talked about the rebirth of Atua.
Yeah.
So, linking those two together, I can't remember if we said it in the cards explicitly, but in my mind, I'm like, the Atua are disappearing, then the portals start collapsing, and the stars start disappearing, and then the Atua are being reborn.
Yeah.
So, they're automatically linked together. We know that a portal formed when X was killed.
Do they actually need the power of a star to be reborn?
But then at the same time, is the portal, like, basically their soul, waiting until they can get the energy to be reborn?
Which that soul is what carries the power to transport.
To transport between dimensions, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so people get stuck inside the portals in between dimensions. Are they enveloped into that, into a soul?
So that's kind of what I pictured happening further on down the line in the scene that we did.
Yeah.
Was exactly. Each of our characters start to just disappear.
Uh-huh. Slowly, I was seeing the exact same thing.
And are being absorbed into that Atua's being.
Yeah.
So when that Atua is reborn, they have new experiences and new memories that they incorporate into. That is how they grow and how they evolve, either purposely or accidentally absorbing other races and other people. They evolve. They have to change. That was kind of one of the ideas that I had that I thought would be really cool.
So how does that experience fundamentally change the Atua from what they were before?
It gives the godlike people a way to grow as a species.
Well, because think of immortality is immortal. It's eternal. You start to probably think of other beings as lesser, whereas if you absorb the experiences of another being that is below you, you start to realize they are not.
And you can associate with them better.
Yeah.
You also become less static as an individual.
Yeah.
You would be able to hold on to your sanity longer, because I would think that after a while, the world's become monotonous, and you would end up turning evil just out of pure desire to want something to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or so distant that you just don't care. And
which might be also some of the divide between the light Atua, the shunned Atua, and the dark Atua.
Yeah.
Either the peoples that they've been absorbing, or
time that they've gone without between absorbing people.
The light Atua are the ones that are eating the most people.
Sounds icky. I don't like that.
I don't think it's that so much. I think, yes, the light Atua are probably the ones who have eaten the most people, but not like they're going out dying just so they can absorb more people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we said at the very beginning, you know, the first portal opened by accident.
Right.
And then more portals started showing up as their war progressed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get back to that point. It was towards the end of the last session, we sort of hinted that the Atua are just dragging the other dimension into their civil war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then this session, we introduced the insect people, which is...
like literally going across the divide to hunt.
Yeah, the Atua. And how it was the shunned Atua that said that they were attacking the worlds made me think, after that came out about the insect people, is that the shunned Atua in their civil war struck a deal with the insect people for the insect people to either not hunt them and only hunt the light Atua or help them fight the light Atua.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like that idea about the treaty. the insects looking for more Atua to kill.
It's a nom.
This is my second time playing Microscope, and I really enjoy it. I love the collaborative world building and how we don't always know what's coming around the table.
Yeah. You never know what somebody else is going to change to what your plans are.
And so then you're adapting to the rest of the group, and I think that's lots of fun. I don't know, it's just a whole different type of role-playing and collaborative storytelling compared to, you know, when we're doing a campaign. It's collaborative storytelling within the scene, but not so much within the world. And here, it's just a very different type of collaborative storytelling.
Yeah. Well, I think we like it because we have already established that throughout the different points of each of our campaigns, we like to break from linear storytelling. And this definitely breaks from that.
Yeah, this is very non-linear.
Where you get to jump forward in time. You get to jump backwards in time. Oh, we already did this. Now I'm going to go back and put this in the middle of this that we've already established. Oh, that further explains what comes after it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
It's being able to explain and then...
Re-explain
and further define and...
Change. I meant this as this, but oh my goodness, now it means this.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, in turn, would explain something else that we didn't have an answer to.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of something we still don't have an answer to is the fissures that were... mentioned twice. They're mentioned in one of the early time periods, eras, periods, and at the end about an invasion coming from somewhere. But throughout the rest of it, we don't have... There were references, the fish hooks in the scene.
In both scenes.
Yes, but we still don't know who they are.
I guess that's a great example of PAFO.
Play and find out?
Yep.
Well, we have a hint as to what they are.
Yes, a hint.
Because in that second scene... with the 30 fish hooks, or I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
There was the sound of, like, crickets' legs, the insects.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
I thought Jordan was hinting at the insects were coming.
Yes.
Or that Atua has absorbed the negative energy and has taken upon themselves that technique of hunting within their own soul.
That's an interesting thought.
Now, you said this was your second time doing this, when you had been part of the Elements of War Microscope session.
Mm-hmm.
Ellie, this was your first time.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that, you know, walking into this with an already established partial timeline, I hope that wasn't overwhelming.
No, that kind of eased me a bit. Like I said earlier, guys, I get really nervous of the unknown.
Yeah.
I'm a very nervous person when it comes to possible judgment of my ideas and creations. Even if it's my own husband, I get nervous of opinions that would come my way. But knowing that I came into something that was already a little bit established, I feel better building off of those already created ideas more so. And then I become a little more explorative and creative as time goes by with creating my own ideas, creating, you know.
And you had some really great collaborative ideas, like the way that you ended it mm-hmm. with the relationship as being the key to communication across the parallels.
Yeah, I really like that.
That's one of those moments that I said, oh, you dropped that right in the middle of something, and that really explained the scene that came right after that when we were mm-hmm. still had so many questions.
Yeah.
Right. That was great.
Thank you. And I love that because I didn't even think about your idea where you were like, that makes sense of who I saw, why I saw that person. Because it's not just the idea that you're communicating from within the portal to somebody outside, but the bonded person that's already been lost, that's who you see there. That was an excellent addition that we hopefully can build off of when we start actually playing, or we could add that next time. I don't know, but I thought that was an excellent addition as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just one layered, it's multi-layered.
So our next step forward is actually to get together again and play a game of Fiasco based on this world.
Now, question is, the idea I thought was to do the game of Fiasco like we did for Angel's Guard, where that game of Fiasco sort of helps us build our characters that we're going to play in the campaign.
That means we have to identify characters and era.
Yeah, so that was one reason why I've been kind of trying to prompt this along, because
Okay.
that helps me write the playset.
I got you.
Uh-huh.
And in addition to that, writing the playset means that we will have something that we can release for people to play in this world. Mm. Also, when you create your character, you're going to be creating these bonds with other players at the table. I will just be playing NPCs. So, like, for example, Aaron would have a bond with Jeff's character and with Jeremy's character. If our seating arrangement was the same.
Yeah. Bonds. Yeah. Then,
but we're not a Tula, so we can't do bonds of a Tula.
It helps with inter-character growth.
Yeah, it does.
Having an already established bond.
Relationship.
Of some sort, like co-workers or
gotcha.
Previous friends or family.
It also helps because, like, in both Terra Proximus and Elements of War, we did a prologue episode that was before the kickoff. And so this fiasco session is going to count as that prologue episode, and it will also develop our relationships. Once we have those character ideas from when fiasco ends, then we can go grab our character sheets and write out our stats and, you know, like our bios and everything like that. It should help overall with the character creation perspective from this point forward.
Which is interesting because I've already been brainstorming the type of character that I'm wanting to play. And so the question that I need to answer is, do I go ahead and scrap that, jump into Fiasco with a fresh face, play through Fiasco, and then build a character off of that? Or do I go into Fiasco with the character that I have in mind?
We almost have to go into with a combination of the two, because one of the things that we have to choose, I would assume we are choosing, is what species we are.
Right.
So that, I think, is going to play heavily into what goes on in that Fiasco.
Mm.
So we have to already come into with that idea.
Basic character in mind before we even start the Fiasco, help Fiasco character creation go along a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So we've been coming up with this list of different races or planets or species as well that we'll have to pick from.
Yeah, which will be really cool because we can work together to develop different planets, different alien species starting packages, so to speak. Because the way that the D6 system works is the aliens have like a list of attributes and skills that you can choose from as starting things, and then you can get like, oh, because you're extra large, you're extra strong, so get 2 extra dice in your strength. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works in the Star Wars game, and it's a pretty good way to do things.
I'm extra large. Does that make me extra strong?
Me too.
I like extra large fries.
Not crinkly fries, though. We had that conversation.
Waffle fries,
curly fries, steak fries, skinny fries, sweet potato fries.
Shrimp gumbo.
So, I think that the beginning of mentioning food is a good point to start discussing the snacks that went on the table.
The snacksidents.
The snacksidents. They weren't snacksidents. They were snack purposes.
They were made with intent.
Snacksceptional.
Yes.
So, I brought a cheeseburger pie.
Very good.
It had pepper jack cheese in it and a lot of cheddar cheese, and also some dehydrated garlic, like black garlic.
I brought a store-bought Boston cream pie because life is cray-cray.
And Boston cream pie.
Well, yeah.
None of us are complaining.
No, we're not complaining. I brought some sweet Italian sausage with a homemade jalapeno habanero mango barbecue sauce.
Which was quite delightful.
Oh, yes. Let's see. I made a Reuben casserole and chili to go on chili dogs.
I also got mine at a store, and it was a salted caramel chocolate cream pie.
Which was also quite yummy. Really good.
It was really yummy. I brought a bunch of candy.
Always good.
Red, white, and blue Sour Patch Kids and Reese's Peanut Butter Cup eggs.
I gotta say, like, if we were giving out points today, I don't know what I would do. I'm hard pressed.
Yeah.
It's between the Reuben casserole and the sausages with the barbecue sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling somebody about our group and about the snacks that we bring. And I mentioned something that somebody had brought to one of the sessions, and they looked at me like, that's a snack for your role playing group. Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Bust through the door. Holding the snack. Oh yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about doing a cookbook before. Like a bone thrower's cookbook to be released.
We could.
It would be awesome.
Oh, like with your crescent roll cheesecake.
Crescent roll cheesecake, yes.
Johnny has made the beer cheese soup before. Mm-hmm. That was really good. That was like one of our first sessions.
Yes. Yeah, early on.
Yeah.
Ellie's famous chocolate chunk cookies.
So good.
Uh-huh. And Aaron's leftovers from his fridge.
Whenever he finds it in the fridge, he's like, this will do.
And that's what wins. That's what wins.
Kimchi fried rice. What's the other one?
Throws it into one bowl. Perfect.
Just mix it all together. And
look what I created here.
Jeff has had some really good ones, too.
Yeah.
You've won a few times, I think.
Takis won.
Yeah, Takis won once. Yeah, I was like, I don't have anything. Takis.
Go to store and buy Takis.
I kind of like some of those entries. I think that, like, putting one every few pages. Win in a pinch.
Win in a pinch. Store bought Takis. Just win the day.
We're plugging different, like, pie shops and everything. It's like, just go to any grocery store and buy some Takis.
Good times. But we don't normally do, like, this one would be hard to do, like,
competition.
Yeah, like, but I thought we had some really good moments of story development.
Oh, yeah.
That were on par with our role-playing moments in our...
And we did have one role-playing section that was...
It was very important,
It was fun. And what I like about that scene is actually not the scene, and we already just said it. It was what came after the scene, Ellie's storytelling, that defined that scene.
The consequences.
Uh-huh. That really showed underneath what was going on in that scene.
Which made it extremely important for us to share, to even play out.
Which made that scene even better. It's like the original Spider-Man and the Amazing Spider-Man, and then No Way Home comes. And
it makes
that makes those two Spider-Men better.
Yes, it really did.
Yeah.
It was very much like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of the role play and the story and the scenes that we do, I do think I would make one change to the microscope playset. And I think that change would be that only the lens can do a dictated scene. My reasoning is because it becomes too easy to drive the storyline from each individual person. Whereas the collaborative storytelling in that scene, where we got stranded inside the portal, I think makes for some really interesting development.
Yeah.
Whereas when everyone can dictate scenes, it just becomes...
It's a free-for-all storytelling.
Yes. Yeah. It gets a little less collaborative to where only giving the lens that capability, I think, could drive a little bit extra fun stuff regarding the focus.
Yeah. And I think with our group, especially, we like details. Mm-hmm. We like the details.
A lot of details.
So actually... Probably what we would call an event is probably a little bit more detailed than what the creator was thinking
intended for
events. So more of our events are almost like dictated scenes.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't here for the last microscope session, I'm over here like, can I be detailed? Am I like...
Yeah.
And we love details. We love details.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, honestly, the one pushback I would give for what you're describing is that this game takes a lot of brain power.
Yeah.
Even with just going around the table once, it took us a good 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So if we added in, every time that we did one of our written scenes, if we added in a lot of collaborative playtime, that would have stretched out that single lap around the table to maybe 2.5 hours.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
But I do like that there's a different switch in your brain that you do for each of those. So for like the events, I thought, especially once we got going, the events were coming a little bit more easier to us.
Yeah.
The dictated scenes, we had to shift gears a little bit for a dictated scene if you were the one coming up with a dictated scene. The played scenes, to me,
the most details.
Well, the most details, and it is a total shift in brain thinking.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Which is why I like to throw it in there as a different way to tell a story. But It's not just one person sitting there racking their brain.
Yeah, about it changes from
personal
you telling a story to us responding to each other's story.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That was my point, is you don't have to come up with everything. You can say a statement, and then somebody's going to take it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to figure out where it's going to go. Ellie said, I'm just going to talk, and if I say something, I may need to rein it back and redo something, because I have no idea where this is going.
Yeah.
But with a collaborative storytelling like a scene, you don't have to know where it's going. Yeah. You say something, somebody takes it somewhere, and then you just piggyback off that. Like the farmhouse where the ship landed. I said, you start to see humans and Noct come out, and Jeff was like, oh, it's people. They look like us. Mm-hmm. I was like, or people would recognize. I piggybacked on that.
Yeah. It was perfect. Because to be honest, the only thing, because everything else I was literally saying in the moment. I guess I can speak for some of you as well, when you were like, oh, it's my turn. Yada, yada, yada. You know, like, here's some stuff out of my mouth. But the only thing that I had entirely planned since the first or second thing I created was the bond.
Oh.
The final thing I said.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing I would change about Mighty Scoop is that they're not called periods, they're called arrows.
Yeah, apparently that's what we really want to call
them. We really want to call them arrows, even though I think the book describes them as periods. We did that even in Terra Proximus. I believe we called them arrows.
Because it's more natural.
I don't know why. We just naturally did that.
One thing I will say, the collaborative nature means like anything can seem out of left field, and then it comes together so well. Because your focus was
on the livestock.
Yeah, on the livestock.
I'm like, what?
What in the world is this going to do? And then I actually was able to bring in the idea of the Star Naya.
Yes, which is one of the things we said in the yes thing, which we had not seen yet.
So that made such a huge difference and brought back something from the very first palette.
With doing that, I wanted to broaden our scope of what we were looking at.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was good.
It forced me, because I already had an idea. I wanted to do something with the in-betweens.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do that the time before, but I decided to do something else. So it's like, next round, I'm definitely doing in-betweens. And Jeff's like, livestock. I'm like, Jeff, how am I going to do in-betweens with livestock? But what I like about it is it gave color and texture to what is going on. It's not just people traveling in space just to travel in space. They had a job to transport from one system to another, and they got caught in this collapsing portal.
Yeah.
There was life going on, normal life, and then this collapsing portal disrupted it. And just like any other livestock accident. Was just a detail of that normal life that really we didn't touch on anything about
trade or...
And then I would like to tee off of you where you were like, gosh, livestock, but then you came up with the idea that the livestock, like, evolving.
Yeah, because I wanted to throw that back. I was like, oh, we haven't actually seen that.
Yeah.
That was the idea, is like, oh, it's in these in-betweens where the divine beings, whoever, are actually doing the forced evolution.
Which, that also goes along with the Atua evolving from that.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff.
I love this group.
Yeah. I don't know how well this would work with another group. I have tried with other tables, and it just...
You have to have storytellers.
Yeah.
You have to have people who love developing
the story. The details of it.
We all love details, yeah.
Yes, this is a storytelling game, not a rule-heavy game.
There's one thing I get excited for whenever I do come to this table is... The looks on all of your faces when you're like, did you see how that connected? Yeah. Oh my God, you guys.
Yeah.
We get excited.
And especially when somebody's like not even finished with their thought and they're role playing, and I'll see like Jeremy or Aaron going, smiling and grinning, and they're like shaking.
Or they're like, I don't know where it's going.
Uh-huh. No, to talk about a previous campaign, there was one moment that I will always remember. It was in the Black House. Of Elements of War.
Oh, yeah.
When, Jordan, you said something, and we were running from the council members, and you said, oh, Chime, you're on that level, right? And I was like, grab onto your seat, because here it comes. The helmet came off, and
you recognize his voice.
It was Chime. I was like,
You were like that. I was.
Yeah, but I actually, as soon as Jordan asked that question, I knew it was coming.
So did I.
And I looked at Jeff. I was like, Jeff, hold on. Hold on. Yeah. It's about to happen.
Poor time.
It's like when you're watching an awesome movie unfold in front of you and you make this connection in your head that the writers made and you're like, dude, that's so awesome. I can't wait to... It happened. It was amazing.
You did it.
Yeah.
You did it.
But yeah, every single time that we do a session, there's always something where we all freak out about something.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. It's great.
One of my favorite cliffhangers that we ever had was in Angel's Guard at the underground thieves market.
No,
the clock broke.
Jeff.
I liked that moment.
Oh, there's a lot of great scenes in Angel's Guard. Yeah. Like when they set the city on fire with poop.
Yes. Huh. Yep. A lot of these seem to have a common theme.
Sewage.
Hey, look, we're in space.
Space sewage.
Sewage.
You're in space transporting animals. What do you think you have? All right, folks. I think that's pretty much a good spot to wrap
wanting
up.
To actually, yeah, you want us to pick
talk
a,
about. Yeah, yeah.
We wanted right. to actually pick an era.
There are seven different eras. Three,
seven. Yep. I think if you're wanting to do episodic with themes like title of campaign colon something else, honestly, it'd have to be later on.
Or Great Migration,
which is a title in and of itself.
Yeah, which there's certain aspects of what we have developed that we won't touch.
We wouldn't be able to get into it all.
We wouldn't touch. Like, Great Migration is even before the Atua show up.
Yeah.
I am very interested in seeing what happens after Era 7. Cultures are united as familiar stars begin to disappear.
After? Oh. Yeah. We play after everything. We have never
done that. So we have this whole history setting it up.
This is our world history.
We have never done that. We've either picked up early on or right in the middle.
If we do that before we play maybe a really quick session, I have another rule set that is you are exploring a space station that was abandoned in previous eons. So depending on how far out we want to play, you kind of go and you unveil more history that you aren't aware of. So specific tools, specific items that you kind of discover.
Sort of like an escape room of discovery.
Yeah. And again, more collaborative storytelling. Like, all right, as you guys delve deeper, you discover a room. What does it look like this room was used for?
I like that idea.
I do too.
Yeah. We would be archaeologists discovering some history.
Yeah.
Just an idea.
I'm for it.
All right, so that's if we're playing after.
If we're going to play after.
That's very interesting. I was going to say either Era 5 or 6, the Treaty of Parallels or the interdimensional portal start collapsing. Those two, I think, have the most meat on them as far as what we can do, as far as different arcs.
Yeah.
I like those eras quite a bit, and they would be two of my top choices.
And that one really would be the Age of Atula.
Yeah.
So something that would be cool if we're going to play after. So at the very end that we have is war. They're gearing up for war.
Yeah,
there's going to be this huge interdimensional, intergalactic battle. And to where now we are in recovery. We are finding which planets have survived. We are exploring and going and meeting back up with different cultures and different
rediscovering groups of people. The universe.
So it's rediscovery.
Like starting history over again.
Yes. So we still have some ideas, you know, the portals still function as they do. We would be discovering those portals.
Ooh. So we had Age of Atua as a possible title. What if the war, we only learn about Atua through history? Yeah. So one of the things I looked up was the word for children, what the Atua called the normal people. So instead of the Age of Atua, the Age of Kama.
Oh.
Hmm.
I like that.
So it's the after the Atua War, the Atua, for some reason, are not around anymore or cannot travel back to this dimension.
K-A-M-A.
K-A-M-A, the Age of Kama.
I like that.
A-O-K.
So that way we get that space exploration, we get that discovery feel.
And
we get still all of the elements of
all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I wanted to go at the end of that. I like the idea of this space station discovery, like exploration, being the wayfinders trying to reestablish, like maybe their old home base, and then going from there.
I actually like the idea of doing it after a huge war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, us not exploring the war, we don't know how long that war lasted.
No, right.
It could have lasted 5 years. It could have lasted 100 years.
And that actually gives me a lot of opportunity to set up some interesting factions, like people who want to bring back the Age of Atula.
Especially if they know how to open portals.
So are we saying we're going to be a group of archaeological explorers?
No, I think Jordan was talking about being the wayfinders, so we are a group of explorers. Yes, there would probably be some archaeological...
That would be another great name for the campaign, just wayfinders.
Wayfinders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I'm drawn to Age of Kama right now.
So I do like Age of Kama. I do like Wayfinders of Kama, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like Age of Kama. I just think Wayfinders is a little stronger, just as
just Wayfinders.
Yeah.
It sounds like a book series.
It does.
Wayfinders, the Age of Kama.
Which would be the first one, season one.
Right.
Wayfinders, the Age of Atua, season two.
Yeah.
Or
season three.
The Age of Atua.
The space sequel.
Too fast.
Dimensional drift.
Not you breaking into the Fast and Furious kind of vibes.
I like Wayfinders. Actually, that was one of the original things that I had thought as a title.
Yeah. I'm torn between the two, Age of Kama and Wayfinders.
Well, we have time to finalize that.
We're joking, but I feel like we can use what we were just discussing, where we use Wayfinders as the set in stone. Like,
that's our group.
And then we do use the Age of Kama, because I love that for the first season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Especially because, you know, we're exploring that. We're exploring this new age, this new era, new period.
We are the Age of Kama, and we're exploring the past. Like you said, season 2, Return of the Tua, or...
Yeah,
whatever happens.
Back.
Yeah. It's
we could do some really solid 80s vibes going there.
Did you ever hear
Atua Unleashed? Atua Awakens.
There's a science fiction writer named CJ Cherry.
The Last Atua.
And she she actually wrote a book called The Pride of Chainer. It was about a human who got adopted into a family of cat-like aliens. And the name of the villains in the series were the Kif. And she wrote up the sequel book to The Pride of Chainer. She sent it off, and they're like, well, you didn't send us a title. And she's like, oh, how about the Kif Strike Back? And she meant it as a joke, and they're like, perfect.
Awesome.
So yes.
We do a comedy one-shot. Better off of Tua.
Just don't wear your socks in the shower. That drives me nuts.
Oh, I'll definitely wear my socks in the shower.
You would.
Campaign title, Wayfinder. Season 1 title, Age of Kama.
I like it.
The other cool thing that gives us is we can be from any of these races other than Atua without having to worry about the faction we belong to, because we don't know how these factions have landed after the war.
All right. So the era we're starting in after period 7, this is uncharted territory.
So as much as I like Wayfinders Age of Kama, I kind of like Wayfinders Uncharted Territory.
Ooh. Yeah, I do too.
Just going to say. And then maybe we could get into Age of Kama.
You're forgetting that we will still have episode titles.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Episode one, Uncharted Territory.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. We already
have episode one title.
Wow.
Possibly. We'll see where episode one goes.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we've been here before.
So I like the idea.
Episode one, recharted.
Actually, that's a pretty good one.
Never go full recharge.
We were recharted before.
Recharged. Let's
get recharted.
I will say, just from an administrative perspective, I like the idea of the archaeological one shot. And then Fiasco.
Cool.
Because I think that helps us develop some more, like, what was the war like vibes.
Okay. This is the craziest war build we've ever done.
Yeah, it is.
We're playing 3 separate games just to build our characters.
Yep.
You have a problem with that?
Nope.
I didn't think so. All right, folks. Stay tuned. There's a lot more coming in Wayfinders. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you all have a good one.
Me too.
Thank you for listening to Bone Throwers Theater. Our cast is Aaron, Ellie, Jeff, Jeremy, Johnny, and Jordan, we are releasing this podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. That means you can share the podcast, but please do not modify it or try to gain financially from it. If you would like to visit our website, you can do so at bonethrowerstheater.com. If you would like to send us an email, you can do so at bonethrowerstheater@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is bonethrowerstheater. You can also look us up on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And until next time, may the bones fall ever in your favor. This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.